Don't tell me your machinations didn't include some backup plan to cover every eventuality. You are the ultimate plotter. Don't tell me you missed a trick.
I watched Belmore fill your eyes with her fire. You are acquiring powers as if you were a master vampire or a master lycanthrope. How could I have planned for any of this?
There was a cold knot of fear in the center of my gut. So you finally admit that you don't know what the hell is going on either?
Oui. Does that please you?
I heard the first stirrings of anger in his voice.
Are you happy now, ma petite? I am well and truly out of my depth. No one has ever tried to forge an alliance such as we have. An alliance not of master and two slaves, but of three equals. I do not think you appreciate how gentle I am when it comes to hoarding my power. The wolves are my animal to call. Many masters would have forced them to simply be an adjunct to their own vampires.
Nicolaus's animal to call was rats, not wolves, I said. By the time you took over as master of the city, Marcus and Raina's pack was too strong for you to make them an adjunct to your power. Hell, until you replenished the vamps that I killed, they were probably more powerful than you and your vampires.
Are you implying that the only reason I am not a tyrant is because I didn't have the strength of arms to make it so?
I thought about that for a second, then said, I'm not implying it. I'm saying it.
You think so little of me?
I know what you were like 2, almost 3 years ago, and I think then you would have consolidated your power base with very little regard for anyone that got in your way.
Are you saying I am ruthless?
Practical, I said. It was his turn to be quiet for a second or two, then.
Practical, yes. I am that, as are you, ma petite.
I know what I am, Jean-Claude. It's you I'm not sure of.
I would never willingly hurt you, ma petite.
I believe you, I said.
I am not sure the same can be said of you,
he said quietly. I don't want to hurt either of you. But Richard cannot harm my leopards, and if you do anything stupid, don't blame me for what happens next.
I would never underestimate your level of practicality, ma petite, though I think Richard might.
He told me I wouldn't kill him just for roughing up Nathaniel.
How rough was Richard to little Nathaniel?
Don't talk about him like he's a child, Jean-Claude, and rough enough that I cut Richard's arm open.
How badly?
The doc's stitching him up even as we speak.
Oh, dear,
he said, and sighed, and this time the sound eased down my skin. I realized that he'd been behaving himself until now, at least about using his voice. No more games, Jean-Claude. I want to put Richard on the phone, and you tell him you did this on purpose.
But I cannot tell him that I lied about Nathaniel now, can I?
You fix this, Jean-Claude. Now. Tonight. I need Richard to teach me how to call Gregory's beast. I don't have time for him to sulk.
What am I to tell him, ma petite? What surety can I give him that you will not be in Nathaniel's arms tomorrow morning? I believe that I can maneuver Richard into staying the night, having him there at your side when the ardeur rises.
Richard's already made his position clear, Jean-Claude. He doesn't let you or Asher or anyone feed off of him. He doesn't see why the rules change just because it's me and sex instead of blood.
He said that?
Jean-Claude gave a questioning lilt to his voice. Yeah, he said that, almost word for word. Jean-Claude sighed, and it sounded tired.
What am I to do with the two of you?
Don't ask me, I said. I just work here.
And what exactly does that mean, ma petite?
It means that we don't have a boss. It's great being equals, if that's what we are, but none of us knows what the hell is going on, and that isn't good, Jean-Claude. We are messing with some very serious stuff here, metaphysically and emotionally and just plain physically. We need some clue as to what we should be doing with all of it.
And who should we be asking advice of, ma petite? If any vampire on the council were to suspect that I have not given you both the fourth mark, they would destroy us, for fear that with the fourth mark we would become an even greater power.
I've talked to Marianne and her friends. They're witches, Wiccan.
So we find what, a local coven and ask their guidance?
He sounded patronizing. I resent the tone, Jean-Claude, especially since I don't hear you offering any better suggestions. Don't criticize unless you can do better.
Very true, ma petite, and very wise. My deepest and most sincere apologies. You are quite right. I do not have a suggestion for whom we might turn to for advice or guidance. I will think upon your suggestion to find a friendly witch to speak with.
I have a friendly one to speak to. She just might need to see the three of us together to see how things work.
You mean your Marianne?
Yeah.
I thought she was more psychic than witch.
There's not all that much difference, I said.
I will take your word on that. I do not have much business with either.
I realized I'd been planning to call Marianne since I woke up sandwiched between Caleb and Micah. Funny how it had slipped my mind. Is there anything you can say to Richard that will help smooth things on this end?
Do you wish me to lie?
Damn it, Jean-Claude!
I can point out to him that if he does not meet the ardieu's appetite, that someone else must.
I've already pointed that out to him. I thought about that for a few heartbeats. He accused me of having... I found I couldn't quite say it. He accused me of doing worse with Nathaniel than I've done, and he was crude about it. I'm not sure I want to have sex with him right now.
You are angry with him,
Jean-Claude said. Oh, yeah.
So angry that if he asked, you would refuse his bed?
I started to say yes, then stopped myself. I was tired. Tired of all of it, of both of them, if the truth be known. Couldn't live with them or without them. I wanted Richard's body like an ache in my heart, but when he wanted to be, he could be ugly, and his mood tonight was ugly. I didn't want to have sex with him when he was like this. Hell, I didn't want to be around him when he was like this.
I don't know, I said. Well, that was honest, and does not bode well. If you refuse Richard, and Nathaniel, and your Nimerage does not return tonight, what will you do in the morning, ma petite? Please, think carefully on this. I beg you to choose the lesser evil, whatever that may be, rather than wait until the hunger overrides your common sense, or even your need for survival.
What are you saying?
I am saying what I have said before, that to deny the ardeur is to worsen it. Deny it long enough and hard enough, and it will begin to erode all that you are, or thought yourself to be. I survived what I did to feed it in those first weeks, but my moral degradation had been accomplished years before I died. I say again, ma petite, that you will not take it as well as I did. I believe it will compromise your sense of who you are.
And fucking Nathaniel isn't going to compromise me? He sighed.
Put that way, I do see your point. But how much more compromising would it be to seduce a stranger?
I would never do that.
Is that not exactly what you did with the Nimerage?
His voice was very quiet as he said it, very careful not to be accusatory. I would have loved to have argued the point, but I hate to lose, and I was going to lose this one. All right, you've made your point.
I hope so, Anita. I do hope so.
He never used my name unless something was very wrong. Damn. You know, just once it might be nice to have normal problems.
And what exactly is a normal problem, ma petite?
Another point for Jean-Claude. I don't know anymore.
You sound tired, ma petite.
It's only a few hours until dawn. I've been up all night, so yeah, I'm tired. Just acknowledging it seemed to bring it on in a rush that left me rubbing my eyes, which smeared the eyeshadow I'd put on onto my fingers and probably around my eyelids. I wore makeup so seldomly that I often forgot I was wearing it. Richard came back into the kitchen with his bodyguards and the were-rats in tow. He gave me a look, and it was not a friendly one. I've got to go, I said to Jean-Claude.
Do you wish me to speak to Richard?
No, I think you've done enough damage for one night.
I meant only to help.
Sure you did.
Ma petite?
Yes?
Be careful, and remember what I have said about the ardieu. There is no shame in it.
Even you don't believe that, I said.
Ah, you have found me out. There is no shame in feeding, if you feed immediately on a person of your own choosing. If you fight, then you will find yourself feeding on someone not of your choosing, in a place not of your choosing. I do not think you would enjoy that, ma petite.
He was right about that anyway. I'll talk to you tomorrow after you get up. I haven't forgotten Damien, you know.
I did not think that you had, ma petite. I will look forward to your call.
I hung up without saying goodbye, mainly because I was angry and scared. Not only did I have Richard to deal with tonight and Gregory to save, but tomorrow morning when I woke up, the Ardure would be there, waiting. There was a chance that it wouldn't be, that the one day was the only time I'd have it, but I couldn't count on that. I had to plan for the worst-case scenario. Worst case was I would wake up tomorrow and need to feed just like I had this morning. The big question was, who would I feed on? And could I live with myself after I'd done it? 35. I hate being awake at 3 in the morning. It is the godforsaken heart of darkness when the body runs slow and the brain runs slower, and all you want to do is sleep. But I had promises to keep, and miles to go before I could sleep, or at least a couple of miracles to perform before I could go to bed. Dr. Lillian had unhooked Gregory's IV, but he was still bundled in the quilts. He sat on the picnic table on the deck, cradled between Zane and Cherry. Dr. Lillian kept touching Gregory, checking his pulse, how clammy his skin was. She was frowning and clearly not happy. Nathaniel stayed by them, keeping the picnic table between him and Richard. Richard hadn't tried to hurt him again. In fact, he'd ignored him studiously. The other cats milled around near the sliding glass doors. The two were-rat bodyguards, Claudia and Igor, were standing to one side of me as I leaned on the railing. They started following me around when Richard came out with his bandaged arm and Jamil and Shang-Da at his back. Richard's power crept on the summer darkness like close thunder, making the hot, sticky night even thicker and making it harder to breathe. I think it was the press of his power, the edge of his anger, that made the were-rats start acting like bodyguards. I'd tried telling them that Richard wouldn't hurt me, but Claudia had shrugged and said, "Raphael told us to keep you safe, and that's what we're going to do." "Even if I tell you that there is no threat?" She shrugged again. "I'd say you're a little too close to this one to make a sound judgment call." I glanced at Igor. "You agree with her?"
"I never argue with a lady, especially one that can beat me at arm wrestling."
Igor's logic was hard to argue with, but it meant that I had acquired 2 tall, muscular shadows, and it irritated me. But neither of them gave a damn whether I was happy or not. They were following Raphael's orders, and my wishes didn't count. So Richard and his bodyguards, and me with mine, stood on the deck, facing Stephen, who had stripped off in preparation for the change. If you made the change with clothes on, you ruined them. Shapeshifters either haunted the thrift shops looking for old clothes to wear on the night of the full moon, or went nude. We all stood there in the circle of Richard's power. The energy built around us like invisible lightning lashing around us. The power literally crackled, raising the hair on our arms, raising the hair on our heads like the hackles on a dog. Jamil said,
"Richard."
But one glance from Richard stopped him in mid-sentence. The power rose another notch, squeezing around us like some kind of giant hand. "What's wrong, Richard? What's with the power display?" I asked. He turned to me, and the anger in his face made me want to step back, but I didn't. I stood my ground, but it took effort.
"Do you want to save your cat?"
he asked, voice thick with the emotion that showed on his face, that crackled in his power. My voice was almost a whisper.
"Yes."
"Then watch," he said.
He spread his hands in front of Stephen, keeping them about 8 inches away from the smaller man's shoulders. The energy squeezed tight and tighter until I had to swallow to try and clear my ears, as if there'd been a pressure change. But swallowing didn't help. It wasn't that kind of pressure. Richard's hands convulsed as if his fingers were digging into something invisible just in front of Stephen. He staggered towards Richard, one step, and I was close enough to hear a small, pained sound come from him. Richard balled his hands into fists, and something shimmered between them like heat caught in the close summer darkness. The bones in my face ached with the building power. The air was almost too thick to breathe, as if it had weight. Richard made one abrupt movement with his hands, and the pressure broke, like a storm finally bursting to life. For a second or two, I thought the heavy, clear liquid that burst around us was rain, but it was hot like blood, and it didn't fall from the sky. It burst from Stephen's body. I'd seen dozens of shapeshifters change, but nothing like this. It was as if Stephen's body blew apart in a rain of hot, thick fluids and small bits of flesh. The beast usually pulls itself from the human body, like a butterfly from a chrysalis, but not this time. Stephen's body folded over on itself, and his man-wolf shape was just suddenly standing there. It collapsed to its knees, panting, shivering. I was left standing, not even breathing, covered in the rapidly cooling bits and pieces of Stephen's body. When I could breathe again, I gasped. Jesus Christ! Stephen's fur was the color of dark, golden honey. He crouched, shivering at Richard's feet. Again, the change may hurt while the person is going through it, but once it's over, they usually stand up and start moving around. Stephen seemed disoriented, almost like he was in pain. What the hell was happening? He crawled the last few steps to Richard, laying his long, teeth-filled snout against his Wolf King's jogging shoes. He was almost in a fetal position, great, muscular arms wrapped around golden fur, lying at his Ulfric's feet. It was extremely submissive behavior, and I didn't know why. Stephen hadn't done anything wrong. I looked up at Richard. His white shirt was plastered to his body with the thick fluids. He turned his face to look at me, and the faint light of stars glistened in the wetness on his face. A thick piece of something slid down his cheek as he glared at me. The look on his face was defiant, as if he expected me to be angry with him. I raised a shaking hand and wiped the worst of the gunk off of my face, flinging it onto the deck where it hit with a wet splat. I looked at the bodyguards. They, too, were splattered with the thick stuff, but not nearly as messy as Richard and I. They hadn't been standing as close. They all stared at Richard, stared at him with a mixture of horror and anger and astonishment on their faces, which let me know that something was very, very wrong. I had to try twice before I could speak, and even then my voice was breathy. I've seen a lot of shapeshifters change into their beasts, but I've never seen anything like that. Was it different because you called Stephen's beast instead of him doing it on his own?
No,
Richard said. I waited for more, but that was all he said, and it looked like all he intended to say. But no just didn't cover it. I looked at the others. Okay, someone tell me what just happened here. Jamil started to speak, then stopped and looked at Richard.
With my Ulfric's permission.
The words were polite, but the tone was angry, almost defiant. Richard looked at him. I couldn't see his face, but whatever look he gave Jamil, it was something that made the other man flinch. Jamil dropped to one knee in the spreading pool of thick liquid. He bowed his head.
I mean no offense, Ulfric. That's a lie,
Richard said, and his voice was lower than normal, just a tone or two above a growl. Jamil darted a glance upward, then bowed his head again.
I don't know what you want me to say, Ulfric. Tell me, and I will say it.
Richard turned back to me, leaving Jamil kneeling.
I didn't just call Stephen's beast. I tore it from his body.
I glanced down at Stephen, who was still crouched at Richard's feet. Why? I asked.
It's usually punishment to do it this way.
What did Stephen do?
Nothing.
Richard's voice was harsh, almost as harsh as the look on his face. Then why punish him?
Because I could.
His chin lifted when he said it, and that arrogance was back.
What the hell is wrong with you, Richard?
He laughed, and the sound was so inappropriate that it made me jump. He laughed, but it was too loud, too harsh.
Didn't this teach you how to call Gregory's beast?
I didn't learn a damn thing except that you're in a foul mood and taking it out on other people.
You want to know what's wrong? You really want to know?
Yeah, I do.
Get out of the way, Stephen,
he said, and Stephen didn't even ask why. He just crawled out from between us. We were left staring at each other, not quite 2 feet apart. What he'd done to Stephen seemed to have taken the edge off his power, but it was still there like some great slumbering thing pressing against the surface.
Open the marks, Anita. Feel what I'm feeling.
I opened the marks already. I figured I had to learn how to do this.
So it's just my shielding?
He made it a question. I nodded. I can feel your rage, Richard. I just don't know why.
Just my shields between us and...
He shook his head, almost smiling. Then he dropped his shields. It hit me like a physical force, drove me back a step. Anger so raw it filled my throat with bile. A self-loathing so deep that it drew tears down my cheeks in two hot lines. I stood there for a minute, feeling Richard's pain, and it was suffocating. I stared up at him, the tears still wet on my cheeks. Richard! Oh my God!
Don't feel sorry for me! Don't you dare feel pity for me!
He grabbed my arms when he said it, and the moment we touched, our beasts poured up from inside us and spread across our skins in a hot dance of power. His beast crashed through me, invisible, metaphysical claws ripping through my body. It was as if Richard's beast was trying to eat his way through my body. I screamed and thrust my beast into his, and I felt claws ripping into meat. There was nothing to see with the eye, but I could feel it, feel fur and muscle and meat under claws and teeth. I screamed not just from the pain, but from the sensations of cutting Richard up. He hurt me, and I wanted to hurt him back. There was no more reasoning, no more thinking, just reacting. Our beasts tore through each other, rolling, clawing, tearing. We collapsed on the deck, screaming. Dimly, I could still feel Richard's hands locked on my arms as if he couldn't let go. There was movement all around us. People hovering, but no one interfered, no one touched us. When we fell, they scattered as if afraid to touch us. Voices shouting above our screams, "What's wrong? What's happening? Anita! Anita! Richard, control it!" His beast was suddenly like a weight inside me, but it didn't hurt. The two energies lay quiet, leaning against each other, not mingling, just leaning. I could almost feel the solid push of his beast against something inside of me that had bones and fur and wasn't me. I couldn't hear anything but the thundering of the blood in my own head. I felt Richard's weight on top of me before I looked down to find him collapsed over me. His head rested on my chest. I could feel the pulse of the blood in his body, his heart racing against the skin of my stomach. I was covered in the cool slime from Stephen's body. One, I was lying in a pool of it. Two, Richard had been covered in it, and he'd slid down my body. I was going to have to shower before I could go to bed, even if it was dawn. And I ached. Ached as if I'd been beaten. I knew I'd be stiff when I moved. Everyone was standing in a ring above us, staring down. I found my voice, hoarse, almost raspy, but clear.
"Get off of me!"
Richard raised his head slowly, as if he hurt, too.
"I'm sorry."
"You're always sorry, Richard. Now get off of me!"
He didn't move. In fact, he settled heavier, hands curving at the edges of my waist.
"Do you still want to help Gregory?"
"That's what this whole show is about, so yeah."
"Then let's try again."
I tensed and started trying to wriggle out from under him. His hands tightened at my waist.
"Easy, Anita. It won't hurt, I don't think."
"Says you! It hurt like a son of a bitch! Let me go, Richard!"
My voice held the beginnings of anger and fear. I liked the anger. Could have done without the fear.
"You fought me to a standoff. It's over," he said.
I stopped struggling and stared at him.
"What are you talking about?"
"We're not the same kind of animal, Anita. They had to find out who's tougher."
I stared down the line of my body into those brown eyes.
"Are you saying this was some kind of dominance display?"
"Not exactly."
Strangely, it was Merle who answered.
"When two such different beasts meet, and they are both strong dominants, such as a true Nimera and a true Ulfric, the two animals must fight and test each other. I have seen it before. It is a type of taming of one beast by the other."
I looked way up at the tall man.
"No one tamed anyone."
Merle knelt beside us.
"I think you are right. It is as the Ulfric has said, a standoff. He could have kept fighting until one of you won or lost, but he chose to let it be."
I remembered someone telling Richard to control it, it being his beast. I looked at Richard. You stopped, didn't you?
I don't care which of us is more dominant, Anita. Those kinds of games have never meant anything to me unless people forced me to play them.
You said something about helping Gregory. What did you mean?
He started working his way a little higher up my body,
sliding his body along mine. I could feel the slime from his shirt recoating my bare stomach and nearly bare chest. My disgust must have shown on my face because he asked,
What's wrong?
Your shirt is covered in slime and I'm lying in a pool of it. I didn't just want you to get off me to be off of me. I wanted to get up out of this mess.
He came to his knees, his legs on either side of mine. I could feel our beasts stretched between us like something that should have been visible, as if each of their heads was buried in the other's chest. He offered me a hand. I stared up at him.
I know you don't need the help, Anita, but our beasts are touching now. It's a close connection, and physical contact will help us keep it until we finish with Gregory.
I didn't need the earnest look on his face to know he was telling the truth. The marks were still open between us. I knew he was telling the truth. I took his hand and he lifted me to my feet. Standing up hurt, and either he felt it or saw it on my face.
I hurt you,
he said softly.
We hurt each other.
I could feel that he was stiff, aching, but he moved like he wasn't, and I still moved human stiff. He raised the bottom of his shirt, still holding my hand.
Touch me.
I looked up at him and he laughed.
Just keep physical contact, Anita. I don't mean anything by it, but I need both my hands.
I laid a hand on his side very tentatively. He shook his head.
I'm going to take my shirt off.
If you can't touch a person's hands, arms, or much of their upper body, you run out of polite places to touch. I settled for sliding my hand under the wet shirt, touching the smooth firmness of his side. Even his skin was damp from the shirt having molded to it. Richard drew the shirt over his head, and I was left standing inches from him as he revealed the flat planes of his stomach, the muscular swell of his chest, and arched his back to draw the shirt over his head. The sight of him, the pull of the lust that always came when I saw him without clothes, pushed my beast against his. I felt furred sides roll against each other, a tentative roll of power that felt like someone had taken velvet and caressed the most intimate part of me. Richard gasped. I concentrated hard to stop the movement, but that I'd done it without thinking brought heat in a wash up my face. I looked at the ground. My hand was still only touching his side, just above his jeans, but the touch felt suddenly intimate. I wanted to take my hand away, and his hand covered mine before I could move. He pressed my hand to him, firm but not forceful. He touched my chin, raised my face until I had to look at him.
It's all right, Anita. I love the fact that just seeing me moves you like that.
The blush that had been fading blazed harder. He laughed, soft, low, with that edge that a man's laugh gets when he's thinking intimate things.
I have missed you, Anita.
I looked up at him.
I missed you too.
His beast moved through me in a wash of power and sensation that left me gasping. My beast responded to his. I couldn't seem to stop it. Maybe I didn't want to. Those shadow forms rolled in and out of each other, through us, until I couldn't breathe, couldn't think. It was Richard who drew back first and said,
Dear God, I never thought...
I felt the effort it cost him to draw back from me, to stop. His face showed a businesslike, no-nonsense look, but I could feel the trembling of other things inside him. His voice came out brisk.
I'll call Jamil's beast the way it's supposed to be done. Feel what I do, how I use my beast to call his.
My voice was a little breathy.
Then I'll do Gregory.
He nodded.
Or I can call Shang Da's beast if you need to see it one more time.
I nodded.
Okay.
He slid a hand around my waist, drawing me against him. It didn't seem as intimate as the royal of our beasts inside us. Jamil stood facing us. He'd stripped off his shirt and shoes, but kept on his pants. It occurred to me for the first time that I'd never seen him nude, except when he'd been injured and near death. Jamil didn't do casual nudity.
one of the few modest shapeshifters I knew.
I'm ready, Ulfric.
After what Richard had done to Stephen, I thought Jamil was being awful trusting. But then everyone trusted Richard. He was very trustworthy. No, lack of trust wasn't the problem.
I don't need to physically touch anyone to do this, but it's easier that way. So I'll touch him so you can understand better how it works.
I nodded, wrapped in the circle of his arm, the firmness of his body, the velvet roll of our beasts like another arm to hold us against each other. Richard touched Jamil's bare shoulder, and I felt his power move outward like a warm wind. It caressed Jamil's skin, and Richard's beast flowed with it, pulling mine along for the ride. Richard's power teased along Jamil, coaxing, and the best analogy I could think of was like someone trying to lure a cat down out of a tree. Beckoning, talking sweetly, promising caresses and treats if only it would come down. But Jamil's beast didn't come down. It came out. It rolled out of the center of his being like a pale golden fog, an almost shape. I saw his beast like I'd seen Micah's earlier for an instant. Then Jamil collapsed to the deck, and his bare back began to ripple like water under a strong wind. The wolf drew out of his back in a long, wet line, and his body dissolved into that dark, furred shape so that his human body became the wolf, like flipping over a coin, heads, tails, but still the same coin. I felt the rightness of it, the harmony of it. Jamil embraced what he was. There was no conflict between him and his beast. I'd never seen him in wolf form. Man-wolf, but not this pony-sized black beast. He was like Little Red Riding Hood's worst nightmare. The wolf shook himself, and I realized that his fur was dry. There was more of that clear goop all over the deck, but very little of it had clung to the wolf itself. Yet another metaphysical mystery. How do werewolves stay dry when shapeshifting is such a mess? I turned without a word, drawing Richard with me. I went to Gregory, still sitting on the picnic table, only Cherry and Dr. Lillian with him now. Zane had come to see what the matter was when Richard and I started writhing on the deck. Gregory looked at me, blue eyes silvered in the moonlight. I smiled and touched his cheek, cupped the side of his face against my hand. I reached for his beast, not with my hand, but with that shadowy thing that swirled through Richard and me. I sent it shivering across Gregory's skin, and he sat up, letting the quilt fall away from his bare upper body. Cherry moved away just enough so they wouldn't touch, as if she was afraid to touch him now. I tried to coax his beast, to call it with sweet caresses and gentle persuasion, but it remained stubbornly just under the surface, trapped by the drugs that still made Gregory's body a prison, and the shock that had further dampened everything I needed to call. But I knew that it didn't have to be gentle. I might not have been along for the ride when Richard brought Stephen's beast, but I'd seen it, and I knew enough of power to guess what he'd done. "I'll try not to hurt you," I said, but I thrust my power into Gregory. I felt it hit his chest and sink into him like a large flesh and fur blade. Gregory gasped, back arching just a little. I found his beast like a curled cat, asleep, sluggish, and I grabbed it in my hand, sank claws in it, and pulled it screaming into the air. I ripped his beast out of him, and Gregory shifted, as Stephen had shifted in an explosion of blood, flesh, and fluid. I was covered in it, so thick I had to scoop it out of my eyes to see. To see that yellow and black spotted man-leopard lying hunched on the table. I watched Stephen come to sniff along his brother's shivering body. "Gregory? Gregory, can you hear me?" I asked, and my voice was softer than I meant it to be. Gregory blinked leopard eyes at me, but a growling voice came out of that furred throat.
"I can hear you."
Stephen threw his head back and bayed. Jamil echoed him, and the leopard's screams of triumph filled the night. 36. Dawn was sliding through the trees in a wash of white, white light that left the trees looking like black paper cutouts against the shining sky when I pulled the curtains and filled the bedroom with twilight dimness. I'd put very heavy curtains in the room when Jean-Claude had been a frequent visitor. The bedside lamp seemed dim after the glow of sunrise. Nathaniel sat on the edge of the bed by the lamp. He was wearing the bottoms of silk pajama shorts. They were a pale lavender silk that echoed his eyes and looked too delicate a color for men's sleepwear. I always suspected the shorts were originally designed for a woman, but shorts were shorts. The lamplight caught red highlights in his auburn hair, where it gleamed down the side of his body like something warm and alive, almost separate. Strangely, in were-leopard form, he was a black panther, so that auburn hair vanished once he left human form. Nathaniel was the only one of the were-leopards still in human form, so he was the only one that got to share my bed. If they were kitty cats, they had to sleep elsewhere, but in human form, we tried to be a big pile of puppies. Somehow it was less comfy with only Nathaniel than it would have been with more of them. Maybe it was the fact that his right nipple still had a circle of my teeth marks. "Shouldn't the bite marks have healed by now?" I asked.
"I don't heal as quickly as some," he said softly. "And marks made by another shapeshifter or even a vampire heal more slowly."
"Why is that?" He shrugged.
"Why does silver kill us and steel not?"
"Point taken," I said. I ran my hand through my still damp hair. I'd showered and was actually wearing pajamas, not an oversized t-shirt, which was my usual sleep attire. Though pajamas may have been too big a word for the emerald green camisole and matching short shorts. There was a floor-length robe in the same vibrant green, so everything was covered, but Nathaniel knew I hadn't dressed up for him. Or at least I hoped he did. He watched me pacing the room with careful eyes. We had crossed a line, he and I, and the mark on his chest just kept reminding me of it. I didn't think that Richard would tolerate Nathaniel and me sharing the bed alone, not that I really expected the three of us to bunk together either. Oh, hell, I didn't know what I expected. I had expected Richard to come to me after his shower, but he was a no-show, and it was dawn, and I was tired. There was a firm knock on the door. I said, "Come in," with my heart beating a little too fast. Merle opened the door, and I hoped my disappointment didn't show on my face. His own face registered nothing, so I couldn't judge what he saw on mine.
"The Ulfric is in the kitchen."
He did look uncomfortable then.
"He is crying."
I felt my eyes widen. "Excuse me?" Merle looked down, then up, almost defiant.
"He has ordered his bodyguard out of the room, and he is crying. I do not know why."
I sighed. Although I was tired, I was excited at the thought of Richard being in the house, of him coming to me, maybe. Instead of sex, we were going to have another session of hand-holding and shoulder-crying. Damn it. I felt my shoulders slump and forced myself to stand upright again. I didn't have to ask why Merle had told me. Who else would Richard take comfort from? I wasn't even 100% sure he'd take comfort from me. I went for the door. Merle held it open for me, and I walked under his arm without having to duck. "Thanks for telling me, Merle," I muttered as I went out into the darkened living room. Shang Da was leaning against the wall by the open doorway that led into the kitchen. He looked as uncomfortable as I'd ever seen him. He wouldn't meet my eyes. What was going on? Caleb was settled on the couch with a blanket and an extra pillow. He was sitting up, the blanket bunched in his lap. He was nude from the waist up and probably nude from the waist down if no one had made him wear jammies. I hoped someone had remembered to put a sheet on the couch. He watched me walk across the room, and even in the dim light from the kitchen, I didn't like the way his eyes followed me.
"Nice robe," he said.
I ignored him and went for the doorway. Richard sat at the kitchen table. He'd opened all the curtains so that the room was filled with the soft light of dawn. His shoulder-length hair had been blow-dried to a soft, fluffy mass. I could never blow-dry my hair without it turning to something thick and awful-looking. The early morning light made his hair look more golden than normal, less brown. He looked up, and I realized the gold glow was a halo effect of the rising sun. It painted a nimbus of shining gold around him, leaving his hair light brown around his face, making the skin at the center of his body look even darker than it was, almost like it was in shadow. I had a moment to see the shine of tears on his shadowed face. Then he lowered his head and twisted in his chair so I couldn't see. The movement placed more of his body in the burning golden light, but the illusion of halos and shadow was gone. I walked to the table, stood close enough to touch his bare shoulder, not sure if I should. "Richard, what's wrong?" He shook his head, still not looking at me. I reached out, touched the smoothness of his shoulder gently. He didn't tell me to go away, and he didn't pull away. "Okay." I touched the tears on the cheek closest to me, smoothed them away with my hand. It reminded me of comforting Nathaniel earlier. I touched Richard's chin, turned his face to me, and dried the tears on his other cheek with the sleeve of my robe. "Talk to me, Richard, please." He smiled. Maybe it was the please. I didn't use that word often.
"I've never seen this before."
He touched the sleeve very gently. I wasn't going to be distracted, not even by him noticing what I'd worn with him in mind. "You have to be as tired as I am, Richard. What's keeping you up?" He looked down, then up, and there was such sorrow in his dark eyes that I almost said, "No, don't." But he needed to talk.
"Louisa is in jail, and Guy is dead."
I frowned. "I don't know the names."
"Louisa is one of our newest wolves."
He looked down again, not meeting my eyes.
"Guy is her fiancé. Husband. Was her husband."
He covered his face with his hands, shaking his head over and over and over. I held his wrists, lowered his hands so I could see his eyes. "Richard, talk to me." His hands turned in my grip, holding my hands. We held hands while I watched the pain in his eyes spill out in words.
"Louisa killed Guy on their honeymoon yesterday. I got the call just before I came here."
"I still don't understand. It's awful. Tragic. But," I said.
"I was her sponsor. I trained her to control her beast, and she lost that control on her honeymoon, in the middle of—"
He lowered his head and raised my hands so that his forehead rested against the back of my hands. "She lost control in the middle of sex," I finished for him. He nodded, his face still pressed to my hands.
"Losing her virginity,"
he said, voice muffled, low. "Did you say virginity?" He pulled away from me then, dropped his hands in his lap, and I noticed for the first time that he was wearing a towel knotted at his waist.
"Yes."
"You mean she'd never tried to control her beast during intercourse?" I asked. He shook his head.
"They'd been engaged for more than 2 years before Louisa was attacked and became one of us. They both wanted to wait for the wedding night."
"Commendable," I said. "An orgasm, to a certain extent, is orgasm. If she could control herself during non-intercourse orgasm, then she should have been able to control herself during intercourse, too." I touched his shoulder again. "You did all you could for her." He jerked away as if I'd burned him, coming to his feet so suddenly that the chair crashed back against the kitchen island, then the floor. I sensed rather than saw people in the doorway. I said, "We're all right." I turned to see Shangda, Merle, and the two were-rats still hesitating in the doorway. "We're all right, go away." They all pulled back, but I knew now that we had an audience because they wouldn't go far. Richard stood in the middle of my kitchen wearing nothing but a towel and the golden first light of dawn. Normally it would have distracted me from anything reasonable, but not this morning. The pain in his face was more important than his body right now. Looking at him, standing there so defiant, so hurt, I had an idea. An awful idea. "Please tell me you don't mean she wanted to wait for any sexual contact until the honeymoon." His chin raised, and that arrogance tried to slide over him. But it was a mask, and I saw through it now. Underneath, he was scared and guilty.
"I taught her to control the beast during anger, sadness, fear, pain, every extreme of emotion, but not sex. I respected her convictions."
I stared at him. It was so something Richard would do. Theoretically, I even approved, but theory and practice aren't the same. In real life, it had been a bad idea, and Richard should have known that better than I did. I felt my face go blank, empty. It was a good cop face, I didn't want anything I was thinking to show for this. So this Louisa shifted in the middle of sex and killed her husband, and the cops caught her. I didn't add that I was surprised they hadn't shot her on sight. Finding the big bad wolf eating the body of the nice little human would be cause enough for shooting to kill.
Louisa turned herself in. I think if she didn't think suicide was a sin, she'd have killed herself.
He turned my way, walking to the sliding glass doors, leaning his forehead against the glass as if he was tired. I wished I could have said it wasn't his fault, but it was. He was her sponsor, the one who was supposed to teach her how to be a shapeshifter. I'd learned from dealing with the were-leopards and Richard and Vern's pack in Tennessee that orgasm of any kind was one of the true tests of their control. Orgasm was supposed to be a release, but to truly give up all control meant shifting form, and that was the ultimate nightmare when you had a human lover. Richard had lectured me often enough when we were dating that he didn't trust himself the night of the full moon, or even the day before. He didn't fear losing control and killing me, just losing control and scaring me to death. Or more honestly, grossing me out. He had shifted on top of me once, and that had had nothing to do with sex. And that one experience had sent me running to Jean-Claude. Well, Richard changing on top of me and seeing him eat someone. I didn't know what to say. All I knew was that I had to say something, that silence was almost worse than anything. He spoke without turning around.
Go ahead, Anita. Tell me I'm a fool. Tell me I sacrificed both of them on the altar of my ideals.
His voice was bitter enough to choke on, just hearing the pain in it. Louisa and her husband wanted to hold true to who they were. You wanted to help them do that. It's perfectly, logically, you. My voice was empty, but at least it wasn't reproachful. It was the best I could do. Because it was a waste. A waste because Richard and the girl and her fiancé had been more worried about appearance than reality. Or maybe I'm just cynical and tired. Ugh, so tired. It was like any really good tragedy, entirely dependent on the personalities of the people involved. If Richard had been more practical and less idealistic, if Louisa and her late husband had been less religious, less pure, hell, if the husband really brought her to orgasm with just intercourse, then if he'd only been less talented. So many things had gone into making all the good intentions go horribly wrong.
Yes, it was perfectly logically me, and I was wrong. I should have at least forced her to have her first experience with Guy where the pack could oversee it, save him. But Louisa was so delicate about it. I just couldn't insist. I just couldn't make her strip down in front of strangers and have her most intimate moment witnessed. I just couldn't do it.
I didn't know what to say. I did the only thing I could think of to comfort him. I went to him and put my arms around his waist, put my cheek against the smooth firmness of his back, and held him. I am so sorry, Richard. So very sorry. His body started to shake, and I realized he was crying again, still soundlessly, but not gently. Great racking sobs shook his body, but the only sound he allowed himself was the harsh shaking of his breath as he gasped, trying to get enough air. He slid slowly to his knees, his hands making harsh sounds down the glass of the door, as if he were taking skin off as his hand slid down the glass. I stayed standing, leaning over him, cradling his head against my body, my hands on his shoulders and chest, trying to hold him. He fell backwards, and I was suddenly trying to hold all his weight as he went for the floor. I tripped on the hem of the robe, and we ended up in a heap on the floor, with his head and shoulders in my lap, and me struggling to sit up. The knot on the towel had loosened, and a long, uninterrupted line of his body showed from his waist, down his hip, to his foot. The towel was still in place, but it was losing the battle. His mouth opened in a soundless cry. Then suddenly there was sound. He gave one ragged, tear-choked scream, and the sound seemed to free something inside him. Because the sobbing was suddenly loud, full of small, awful, painful sounds. He sobbed and whimpered and screamed and clutched at my arms, hard enough that I knew I'd be bruised. And all I could do was hold on, touch him, rock him until he quieted. He finally lay on his side, his upper body as far into my lap as he would fit, the rest of him curled up so that one thigh covered him. The towel formed a heap on the floor underneath him. I didn't even know when the towel had fallen away. I was sort of proud of that because usually when I see Richard naked, I lose about 40 points of IQ and most of my reasoning ability. But now his pain was so raw that that took precedence. It was comfort he needed, not sex. He finally lay quiet in my arms, his breathing slowed almost to normal. His eyelids had fluttered shut, and for a moment I thought he was asleep. Then he spoke, eyes still closed.
I appointed an Eros and Erante for the pack.
His voice was still thick with all the crying. Eros was the Greek god of love or lust, and Erante was the muse of erotic poetry. In werewolf lore, they were the names for sexual surrogates. A man and a woman that did what needed doing when a werewolf's sponsor was too squeamish. Vern's pack had them because Vern's Lupa was very jealous of her Ulfric, and sometimes you just needed someone who isn't emotionally involved.
That's good, Richard. I think it will make things easier.
He opened his eyes and they were bleak. It made my chest ache to see that look in his eyes.
There are other positions that would make a lot of things easier,
he said, voice thick and low. I tensed up. I couldn't help it because I knew that there were titles among the Lukoi that would make all the problems he'd created in the pack fixable. There were titles that amounted to executioners, torturers. The Lukoi have a long history through some very harsh times. Very few packs fill these slots anymore. Most don't see the need, but then most Ulfrics are good little tyrants. They don't need to delegate the rough stuff.
Do you know what Bulwark means?
Richard asked softly.
It's one of the names of Odin. It means worker of evil.
My voice was almost as soft as his.
You didn't remember that from a semester of comparative religion back in college?
No,
I said. My pulse had sped up. I couldn't help it. Bulwark was the title for what amounted to someone who did the Ulfric's evil deeds. It could be anything from trickery to lies to murder.
You asked Vern about it, didn't you?
Yes.
I kept my voice low. I was afraid to be loud, afraid he'd stop talking. I thought I knew where the conversation was going and I wanted to get there.
Jacob is going to challenge Sylvie,
Richard said, and his voice was growing stronger.
And he'll kill her. She's good, but I've seen Jacob fight. She can't win.
I haven't seen him fight, but I think you're right.
If I made you Bulwark.
He stopped. I wanted to yell at him to finish, but I didn't dare. All I could do was sit there, very still, and try not to do anything that would change his mind. He started over.
If I made you Bulwark, what would you do?
That last was soft again, as if he couldn't quite believe he was saying it. I let out a breath I hadn't even realized I was holding and tried to think. Think before I spoke, because I'd only get one shot at this. I knew Richard, and if what I said didn't meet with his approval, the offer would go away, and he might never be willing to ask for this kind of help again. I'd seldom been so eager to speak and so afraid at the same time. I prayed for wisdom, diplomacy, help. First, you'd need to announce my new title to the pack. Then I'd choose some helpers. I'm allowed three, Baugi, Suttung, and Gunnlod. Richard said,
The two giants Bulwark tricked to get the mead of poetry, and Gunnlod, the giant's daughter who he seduced for it.
Yes.
He rolled his upper body over so he was looking up at me.
You spent almost every weekend of the last 6 months in Tennessee. I thought you were just studying with Marianne, learning how to use your talents, but you were studying the Lukoi too, weren't you?
I tried to be very careful, as I said. Vern's pack runs very smoothly. He's helped me make the Wereleopards into a true pard.
You don't need a Bulwark or a Gunnlod to make the leopards into a pard.
His gaze was very direct, and I couldn't lie to him. I was still your Lupa, but not a werewolf. The least I could do was learn about your culture. He smiled then, and it reached his eyes, just a little. Chased that lost look away.
You didn't care about the culture.
That pissed me off. Yes, I did. His smile widened, his eyes filling with light, the way the sun filled the sky as it rose above the edge of the world.
All right, you cared about the culture, but that wasn't why you wanted to know about Bulwark, the evildoer.
I looked down, feeling just a little embarrassed.
Maybe not.
He touched my face lightly, turning me to look down at him again to meet his gaze.
You said you didn't know about Jacob before you talked with him on the phone.
I didn't, I said.
Then why ask Vern about Bulwark?
I stared down into those true brown eyes and spoke the truth. Because you are kind and fair and just, and those are lovely things to have in a king, but the world is not kind or fair or just. The reason Vern's pack runs smoothly, the reason my pard runs smoothly, is because Vern and I are ruthless when we need to be. I don't know if you could be ruthless if you had to be, but I think it would break you if you managed to pull it off.
Having you be ruthless for me is going to break something inside of me, Anita. Something that's important to me.
I stroked his hair, feeling the thick softness of it. But me doing it won't break as much or as badly as you doing it, Richard. He nodded slowly.
I know, and I hate myself for that.
I leaned over and kissed his forehead very gently. I spoke with my lips touching his skin. The only true happiness, Richard, lies in knowing who you are, what you are, and making peace with it. His arm curved up around me, holding me against him. He spoke with his mouth against the hollow of my throat.
And are you at peace with what you are?
I'm working on it, I said. He kissed my throat very softly.
Me too.
I drew back enough to see his face, and his hand thrust upward through my hair, pulled my face down to his. We kissed, soft, then harder, his lips, his tongue, his mouth working at mine. I cupped his face in my hands and kissed him long and hard. When I drew back breathless, I found that he'd rolled his lower body over and lay on his back, nude. He laughed at the expression on my face and pulled me down towards him. I lost that 40 points of intelligence and all my reasoning skills as he undid my robe, and I ran my hands down the long line of his body. I had just enough self-possession left to say, "Not here. We've got an audience in the living room." His hand slid under the green satin of the camisole, curving around to my back, pulling me against him.
"There's no place in the house that they won't hear us. Smell us."
I pulled back from him before he could kiss me.
"Gee, Richard, that makes me feel a lot better."
He propped himself up on one arm, staring down at me.
"We can go into the bedroom if you want, but we won't be fooling anybody."
I didn't like that, and it must have shown on my face because Richard drew his hand out from under my top and said,
"Do you want to stop?"
We hadn't really gotten started, but I knew what he meant. I looked into the solid brown of his eyes, traced the edge of his jaw with my gaze, the fullness of his lips, the curve of his throat, the spread of his shoulders, the way his hair fell around him, catching the early morning light, bringing out shades of gold and copper in his hair, the swell of his chest, his nipples already dark and hard, the flat line of his stomach with that thin, dark line of hair that went from his belly button to... The skin was darker, richer. You could almost smell the blood that pumped him full and hard. He looked ripe, like he was something full to bursting with life. I wanted to touch him, to squeeze, oh so delicately. I lay on the floor with my hands at my sides, my pulse beating in my throat, and said, "No, I don't want to stop." My voice was almost a whisper. His eyes filled with that dark heat that spills into a man's face when he's almost 100% sure of what's about to happen. His voice was deeper, that low note that most men's voices get when the excitement runs deep.
"Here? Or the bedroom?"
I tore my gaze away from him to look at the open doorway to the living room. There was no door to close. I needed more privacy than this. Even if they could hear us, even smell us in the bedroom, at least they wouldn't be able to see us. Maybe it was only an illusion of delicacy, but sometimes illusion is all you've got. I looked back at him. "Bedroom."
"Good choice," he said,
and got to his knees, taking my hand, so that when he got to his feet, he half-pulled me to mine. The movement startled me, and I fell against him. The height difference was enough that it put my hand on his hip and so very close to other things. It embarrassed me how very much I wanted to touch him, hold him. I started to pull away because I was so close to losing all decorum and groping him right there in the kitchen. I wasn't entirely sure that if I grabbed him, we'd make it to the bedroom. I wanted that door between us and everyone else. He put his arms around my waist and lifted me off my feet until our faces were even, and I didn't know